Greetings and welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. This is a weekly podcast of Sunday homilies and theological reflections given by the staff of the Catholic community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Nathan Castle, OP, adjunct staff of the Catholic community. It is the 15th Sunday in Ordinary Time, and the readings are from Cycle B.
Every Catholic community in the world, like ours, is gathered under the patronage of one of the saints. Very often, the name of a community and its church building are the name of that patron, St. Mary's Church. Not too difficult to figure out who the patron is. Our community is named the Catholic Community at Stanford, and we, since 1995, when we Dominicans started serving here, has been under the patronage of St. Dominic. I have a story of Dominic to tell you today. Dominic lived from the late 1100s and died in 1221. He lived 52 years, but his family, they were from northern Spain, and his uncle was a priest. His uncle lived right next to a cathedral in what amounted to a little monastery. And when Dominic was 8 years old, his parents gave him to the uncle to raise inside the monastery. Not a particularly unusual practice in the day. Any way you look at it, an unusual way to grow up. But 8-year-old Dominic grows up in this monastic enclosure, moves into the teen years, and decides he would like to be a priest. So he studies for priesthood and is ordained as a young man. Still hardly ever leaving this one little enclosed space until somebody from that area, some noble person, decides to marry a noble in Denmark. You know how in European history, nobles are always marrying somebody in another country, usually to avert a war? Well, anyway, Dominic is now, they come to him and say, "We need a chaplain. Would you walk to Denmark with us and back?" So he jumped at the chance. He wanted an adventure. So he joins this big wedding retinue that starts on their way to Denmark. The way it worked in those days is when you set out at the beginning of the day, you kind of planned your trip for about how far you thought you could get in a day, and you figured out what inn or hostel or place is where you could get food and drink and a place to sleep. And as it would happen, you and everybody else that was on the road, when it got nearly dark, would pull in to the same inn. And you wouldn't disappear into some little cubicle like we might at a Motel 6. You entered into a space where there was food and drink, perhaps a bar, and a place where you could put down your bedding. But it might be one big room where all this is going on. Well, Dominic just thought this was the coolest thing ever. Anytime you're going to get a whole lot of people traveling together, you're going to have some people that just don't want to go to sleep. And those are the ones he hung out with at the bar. And he was up for a conversation with anybody that wanted to just keep talking. He thought that all of Europe was Catholic because this was well before the Reformation occurred. Everyone was nominally Catholic. But what he discovered was a lot of the people that were his fellow travelers, in fact, had gone off into all kind of weird ideas about God. And the worst was, in his opinion, this notion that what we are is a combination of body and spirit. You with me? Your spirit is good, but your body, it's evil. And so you're cursed in this evil body, and you're trying to somehow become a spiritual person in this evil body. Well, Dominic thought that was nuts. But a lot of people were really, that had this really ingrained teaching around this business. Well, he got to Denmark, did the wedding, came back, and tried to resume his previously normal life. Went back into his choir stall to say his prayers. And he was just so antsy. He was fidgety. He was restless. He couldn't stand it because there were all these people out there that if only somebody could speak to them and teach them, they might really have happy lives because they wouldn't be trying to fight their evil body. They'd be giving thanks for the life that they've been given body, mind, and spirit. And he wanted to go out there and deliver that message. The problem was, at his moment in the church's history, not even priests were allowed to preach, to do what I'm doing right now. And there was a reason for it, because most of them didn't know how to read, they couldn't have read scripture, and they hadn't had any training in how to speak either. Bishops did, so bishops kept preaching just to themselves. And in fact, in those days, you know how at different times and places in political history, in a country, the leadership might change, there's a new president, a new prime minister, or whatnot, and then all the other workers are kind of fired, and then whoever was made donations to the winning campaign or knew somebody and was well-connected, suddenly all these government jobs go to new people. That's the way the priesthood was in Dominic's day. You could, a lot of young men could become a priest if they were well-connected. They knew somebody. It was a mess. Well, there was a bishop, Diego was his name, who was about to try to do something about it. And he got Dominic involved and other people involved, and before long, they were just out there doing it. They were just out there preaching. They were talking about the scriptures, talking about Jesus. There began to be this big excitement around the whole thing, and lots of people were coming to the practice of the faith, and so on. It was a wonderful thing. They tried to get permission for it to make it all legitimate, and the Pope said no. Bishop Diego and Dominic go back from Italy, back to Spain and southern France, and they didn't know what to do. Should we stop the whole thing because we've been told no? But there's so much life in it. And before they could really make up their minds, Bishop Diego dies. And now Dominic, who's not a bishop, is out there kind of as the leader. He's really stuck out there. And he had to decide, do I do this thing that it seems the Holy Spirit is calling us to do and that's bearing such fruit, or do I play it safe and obey the law, the Pope? It was a dilemma. You know what happened next? The Pope died. I don't know how these people got their appointments with the Pope so easily, but in these books. So Dominic went to Rome and he had a conversation with the Pope. And he asked the same question. Could you bless this new movement and legitimize it, make it legal? And he brought with him some of the people who had been brought into the practice of their faith to meet with the Pope and tell him their stories. And this time they got the yes that they wanted. Now Dominic's life was never going to be the same again. He thought that his life was set for life. I mean, being a monk, that's really solid, stable work. And he just kind of set that aside. It comes to mind because in the first reading today, you meet the prophet Amos, who we hardly ever hear from. It's a pretty short prophetic book. And we heard that Amos he had kind of two things on his resume. He had been a dresser of sycamore, so he kind of worked in the timber industry, and he had been a shepherd. And, oh, by the way, a prophet. Now, prophets in that time went to prophecy school, and the prophet schools were run by the king because it was a theocracy. What the king said was God's will. And so the prophets worked for the king, and in that system, the prophets very often said the king is doing a great job. Yay for the king. Okay? The ones that were paid by the king pretty much said the king's doing a great job. And then here comes this guy with lumber and shepherding in his resume, and God picks him and says, I want you to stop doing that, and I want you to be my mouthpiece. I want you to be my prophet. And I want you to speak to the king, and I want you to correct him. So Amos starts doing that, and in the reading today, he's being shown the door. He's being told to get out of here and go down to Judah where they like your type. We don't like them up here in Israel. Then in the gospel today, it's only chapter 6 of Mark. You only are meeting the first of the disciples in like chapters 2 and 3. 23. It's only chapter 6. And now it's like Jesus is turning the apprentices loose on the world. You've been doing a little bit of an internship, and now you see how it's done, go do it. Come back here and tell me later how you did. Don't bother bringing a bunch of stuff with you. Just bring a walking stick because it was a sign of authority. You know, I don't know why it was a sign of authority, but in that time and place it was. So, yes, you have authority. Don't bother with bringing much of anything else. Oh, you can wear shoes because you're going to do a lot of walking. But nothing much else. I'm going to give you what you need at the moment that you need it. These are people who were told to drop their nets, remember? Leave behind the life that you had already built and go do this other thing. Now I'm wondering, does that have anything to do with you? What are you doing? How's your life organized? In what ways is it just the way you wanted it to be? Is there anybody in here who, like Dominic, found themselves itchy, restless, thinking as good as this is, or as long as I've done this, maybe I should be doing something different? That would be me. That's why I left this position a year ago after 25 years as a campus minister, because about a year before that, it just kept coming back to me that I was doing the same thing that I had done 23 or 24 times in a row. I love doing it, and I was, I think, good at it. At one point, I was in charge of all the campus ministers of the United States. I had the resume. I loved the work. And why was I restless? I think the Spirit put something on my heart and said, I have something else for you to do before it's all done. And I started thinking, you know, I'm 59 years old. I'm healthy to this point. I'm capable of trains, planes, and automobiles. And I began to feel like I ought to walk to Denmark. You know, I felt like I should be doing something else. Try this on. There's constantly polls being taken about American religious practice. And there's four categories that always show up as the top four affiliations, if you want to call them that. Do you know what they are? I'll tell you. Catholic, Protestant. You know what the other two are? Former Catholic, former Protestant. They're beginning to be called the nuns, or sometimes they're called the church alumni. Right? And I'm finding them everywhere I go. My goal for my ministry was, as this moves on, if this is the next decade of my life, maybe the rest of my useful life, I'm hoping to kind of be in the Roman Catholic part of the universe about 50% of the time. And remember, Catholic means universal, doesn't it? Last time I checked. I want to be in the Roman Catholic universe about half the time, and in the other universe, the rest of the universe, the other half of the time. So I started looking around. How do you position yourself to get hired to do jobs in the rest of the vague universe? So I started looking at things that, at least in our country, looked to me like we're not as involved in as I wish we were as a church. And I came up with three. You've been following all the issues surrounding race relations in the last year? No? No? All this don't shoot and now the people at a Bible study getting murdered in their church, the Confederate flag thing, it goes on and on. I grew up in the segregated South and I thought maybe there's something I can do to help. Related to that, I recently read a statistic. I was concerned about the number of African American men in prison, the large percentage of African American men in prison. And I read a statistic that we have more African American men in prison in the United States now than were slaves in 1863. Isn't that strange? More African American men behind bars now than were slaves in 1863 at the time of the Emancipation Proclamation. I wondered if I could do anything about that and maybe intercept younger men. I started looking at that. I had done a little bit of work with people coming out of prison, because we had those three strikes laws for so many years that put a lot of people in jail for long sentences, and then the electorate kind of turned on that and decided it was expensive and that it might even be counterproductive. And some of the same forces that were in favor of that 20 years ago are now coming back and saying, let's find cheaper ways to do this. Let's find halfway houses or some other kind, or shorter sentences or something. So I started working with a group of people that were coming out of prison through a St. Vincent de Paul program. But it was only affecting about 10 people a year. I thought this would be great if it were scaled. So I started wondering, could that be my place? And then I saw one other thing that keeps coming up all the time. Wounded warriors. People coming back from these wars that just seem to never end in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I started praying about all three of these things and just said, you're going to have to point me in a direction. I can't just be out there kind of nebulously doing kind of everything and nothing. I need some sort of a focus for the part, half of my life that I hope will be lived outside of the Roman Catholic Church. And it's begun to happen. I was at a conference a few months ago with a man who's in charge of psychological health for the Marine Corps. He became my mentor for a couple of days. His name is Bill Nash. Any of you know him? There are a lot of VA, and at Stanford there's a lot of research being done on a lot of the problems that that come from being in combat zones to the psyche and the brain. Anyway, Dr. Nash, he's a Catholic guy. He taught us that of all those who are returning from these wars right now, what would you guess is the percentage who have PTSD, post-traumatic stress? 80? It's 15. 15%. And he explained why. There's about six different criteria that have to be met by the psychiatrist, and he is a psychiatrist. He's saying, when I'm diagnosing, I have to check off six boxes in order to give that diagnosis. But many people have some of the symptoms, but not all of them. And so many are in this other area. I started looking at the field, and there's plenty of people who have skills that I don't have that work with the very, very wounded people, and people with brain injuries, things that are way beyond anything I might be able to help with. And then there's a whole bunch of nonprofits trying to help with the number of people who are homeless and veteran. But he was saying, would you guys in the church, would you please do something about the great big middle? There's a whole bunch of people in the middle, and what he created a category, he and some others, they're calling it moral injury. Have you ever heard that phrase? Moral injury. He explained it like this, that people come into military service as late in their teens or in their early 20s, and by that time they have a moral code that's been developed. In the church, we say that the age of 7 is old enough to go to communion because you know right and wrong. Your morals are established well enough to be able to understand receiving communion at 7. So people enter military service with a moral code. And then while they're in combat, stuff happens that breaks their moral code. Sometimes it's in the following of orders. Other times it's in the kind of fog of war. Sometimes it's by commission, doing a thing. Other times it's by omission. You weren't allowed to stop a crime in progress, even something heinous, because it wasn't the mission. You had to watch somebody suffering something awful, and you couldn't do anything about it. Anyway, he's coaching me in this new career. And now I'm going out and trying to find places where I might be able to bring what might be some of the fruits of being a Catholic Christian to places where that just isn't known. So I feel like I belong very much in this gospel. And I don't know what to bring along. You know, a staff. I'm out of my depth, at least in that 50% of my life. The other part's okay. I have the resume to work inside the church. But I'm also trying to do this other thing. If any of you would be interested in staying in touch with me as this kind of develops, or maybe can steer me in the direction of recently returned veterans I might be able to speak with, or anybody that has a story to tell that has anything to do with this topic, I've left some sheets at the back in the vestibule of the church where you can put your contact information down and we talk. I've already begun to get a lot of leads. I'm hoping to do some retreats, especially around healing of memory, to help people. So a lot of people have circled a date on the calendar when they would get to come home, and then they got home and found that they're really not at home in their own skin. They can't sleep, and so they're always tired because they're hypervigilant. The 4th of July was hard because of all those firecrackers. They sound like guns. It can be hard to go to the mall or to a ball game because you're constantly scanning, looking for the bomber, that kind of thing. So anyway, that's my story. I'm wondering if there's something percolating in your life that makes you think, maybe it's time, maybe I'm being called to do something different. It wouldn't surprise me. Remember, everything that we do here is temporary because this is a temporary home. Even the things that seem the most permanent, like living inside a monastery, making a lifelong commitment to do that, in Dominic's life, it ended up being not the permanent thing. In the end, I don't think anything here is really permanent except love. One of my maxims is things are temporary, people are permanent. And on a day when I start getting bogged down in things, I sometimes come up for air and go, yeah, but people are permanent. There might be a conversation I should be having or somebody I ought to be listening to as much as I'd like to clean my inbox or finish my task list. There might be something even more important that isn't on my list. That's all I got today. I'm wondering if in these readings and in this story, you might have something like Dominic, like those first apostles, like this little moment in my life happening in you. And if that's the case, I'll pray God's blessing upon that, whatever that thing is that might be sending you out. You know, the Holy Father has said to priests, get out of your sacristies and get into the streets. He's even scolded bishops in his priests in his diocese whose shoes are not dirty, because that means that they've been staying on the paved streets and not the unpaved ones. In fact, I heard a story that some of his priests in Buenos Aires started walking in the dirt before they go to his office. He's also asked that, he says he wishes the whole church would be a field hospital. Think of the TV show MASH. He wants the church to be a field hospital right in the middle of where human suffering is and going there rather than waiting for suffering people to find their way to here, to this. So God bless you wherever you're working and whatever you're doing. But I'll also pray that even if you're busy doing something that you're already committed to, that there's also the opportunity for the Spirit to speak to your heart and maybe direct you to the thing that might be emerging sometime soon.
This has been a presentation of Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. Director Gary Glover, with music by Albert Tommaso and Shane Clarkson. For more information, please visit our website at catholic.stanford.edu or visit our offices on the third floor of Old Union. Till next time, God bless you.